Jan Richardson wrote this poem, Rough Translations, as a reflection on Paul's letter to the Romans, in which he reminded the Church of Rome of Sarah and Abraham's hoping against hope and continuing to believe in God's presence and promise despite terrible, overwhelming obstacles. Hope against hope. We know that. We know that in our own lives when we're so defeated and there's some little part of us that rises and says, yes, but. And it doesn't make sense, because how do you get from hopelessness to that place where hope grows, really grows and flourishes and takes hold in people's lives, in the church and in the world? A friend said to me before our Bible study this week, in thinking about the meditations that I'm sending out with the image and the quotation of the day and the lectionary passage, she said, I couldn't quite get this. And, you know, I said, neither can I. Because moving from Jesus' words, the danger that he talks about that is in front of and behind him, it's hard to hold that image of the God as a mother hen with her chicks underneath her. But that's where we're called to live. That's what our lives are about. I once preached a sermon titled Between the Baptism and Beheading, about Jesus' baptism that's followed almost immediately by John's beheading, and or followed in his ministry as an adult with John's beheading, and that we're called to live in that space. Well, we're called to live in that space between the agony of the truth, the wear and tear of the road on the way to Jerusalem, the reality of knowing what Jerusalem will bring, and the image that God's got us. That as we come into church together, gathering together, that we will go out better than we were. We will go out feeling that sense of nurture and care. We will know God's heartbeat once again. Just as surely as we can feel our own, we will know that God is with us. It was hard for me to imagine preaching a sermon on Luke's gospel this morning, given the political climate in the United States and around the world, the outrageous amount of suffering around the world. I wished I had a text that was more comforting than our story for today from Luke's gospel. But our reading this morning offers us a mirror to our own times and lives. Lent is the season for uncomfortable questions and hard truths about what is life-giving and what is death-dealing. It's just what's needed to open our eyes and our hearts and to set our feet on the path once again of healing and wholeness as individuals and community. Lent is kind of like a 12-step program in 6 weeks. We have practices that we and images and stories that are guides to us through the wilderness. It helps us get ready for the hard times. As I said last week, the Shirelles says, Mama says there'll be days like this, weeks like this, months like this, years like this. And we have to be prepared for them, or we'll just roll over and die. During these 6 weeks of Lent, in a focused way, we take a hard look at the obstacles that block us from God and good. Obstacles on our own personal spiritual path, but also obstacles on the road toward a whole new world of justice and wholeness and peace. It's a 6 weeks course, but of course, it's more than that. It's a lifelong journey. That's what this short story in Luke's gospel is about. An encounter, a warning on the road to Jerusalem, the road out of Galilee, where the petty tyrant Herod runs roughshod over the people. Herod Antipas, successor to the evil Herod of the nativity stories and equally ineffective at hindering God's plans, is motivated by deep fear and a hunger for power and security. His vision of how things should be obviously clashes with the things Jesus is saying and teaching as he travels around right there on Herod's home turf. Theologian Leslie Hoppe marks the sharp contrast between Herod's plan to conform to people to conform the people to values of the Roman Empire and Jesus' mission, who called the people not only to repent, but to remember God's heartbeat, to be faithful to the ancient promises of God. We have this building tension in Luke's gospel. First of all, we've gone from chapter 5 in Luke's gospel to chapter 13. We've skipped a lot. We've skipped all the stories of Jesus gathering thousands and thousands of people around him, people who have come to hear his word, to learn from his teaching, to be healed, to be made whole. And then they don't go home. They continue with him because Jesus offers a way that is different than the dominant culture, a way out of Roman and religious power structures that are power over, that dominate and oppress and hold people captive. We have this tension between a posse-like group of the Pharisees and Sadducees and scribes and religious elite who are following Jesus everywhere he goes, trying to catch him up, trying to entrap him and show to the world that he is not the one chosen by God, not the Messiah sent by God, does not have God's authority to do and say and teach what he does. But some Pharisees have started to get his drift. We have stories that we've missed where some Pharisees are amazed when they see and hear what Jesus does and says. And so their hearts begin to turn, but they're caught between two worlds, as many people in our lives today are. One foot in the world of the haves and the other foot in the world of the have-nots. One foot in the world of the empire and of the religious elite, of the hierarchy that says, do this, go there, believe this, don't believe that. And the other foot that says, God is the God of everything and everyone, and we can all be healed and whole. That is a hard place to be, friends. And I know that most of us know that place. And so that morning when the Pharisees comes to warn Jesus, get away from here, they say. Herod, he wants to kill you. Jesus knows that tender place where they stand. But he calls them on it and sends them back to Herod. He says, go and tell that fox that I am doing what I am doing. He says, and on the third day I will complete my work. What if we too learned just to continue doing what we are doing the work God calls us to be, living into our full God-giving potential in the face of opposition and remembering who and whose we are and what is ours to do? What if we continued doing what we were doing when we faced conflicts in our homes, in our churches, in our workplaces, in the world, when we turn on the TV and we hear this politician or that yelling and screaming and fomenting fear and hatred? What if we turned back to doing what we were doing instead of calling a committee for conflict resolution, instead of getting caught up in the drama? What if we refused to do that? What if we refused to engage with that rhetoric? What if we refused to be derailed by fear and loathing? What if we went back to doing the work that God called us to do? I had an experience this week where I've hired someone to do something important for me, and he's been quite slow. He's been distracted. He's had other things, other work. And I felt some pressure to get something done this week. So I sent him an email and said, can we get this out by Friday? And he called and left a message saying that he was with someone who had had her child adopted, and they were trying to locate her adult child. And he was hearing her story, which was terrible and sad, and holding her heartbreak, and he just didn't have time. Well, I hadn't heard that message when I sent another email saying, I know you're really busy, but I hope you can do this. And he sent me an email back and said, sometimes other things take priority. And I remembered that that's so. And I remembered in my own ministry that every day I deal with such hard things in your life. Every day, the practice of doing what God calls me to do, the everyday mundane kind of stuff, of living in the image of Christ, living into my God-given potential, it is so easy to get distracted by the little things that come up. Not really trivial, but in the grand sense of things, yes, too small to give too much of my energy to. Do you know what I'm saying? Have you ever found yourself in that place and you're going over and over in your mind something that you said that maybe hurt somebody's feeling, or something they said that hurt your feeling, or some threat out there in the world that if you don't do this, you'll do this? Trump's words that the Pope would be sorry when ISIS attacks the Vatican and wish he had prayed for Donald Trump to be president. Those kind of words. Doesn't something in you rise to want to take that on or turn away and want to shut it off? And what Jesus does is show us another way. I'm going to do what I do today and tomorrow and the day after that. I'm going to keep on doing it, and God's going to keep on doing it. And even though Jerusalem looms on the horizon, even though Washington, D.C. and Wall Street and all of the apparatus that keeps us all enslaved these days, even though it looms there and damage will be done, God's forward movement will continue to go on. And we need each other to survive. We need each other to thrive. I don't know about you, but I couldn't do it without church. I couldn't do it without communities of faith. And it's not just communities of faith. I appreciate the quote from the day by Wendell Berry when he says, "My vision of the gathered church that had come to me had been replaced by a vision of the gathered community. What I saw now was the community, imperfect and irresolute, but held together by the frayed and always fraying, incomplete and yet ever holding bonds of the various sorts of affection." That. We are called to be the chicks, and we are called to be the mother hen. We're called to be a place where people can come and feel safe and nurtured and get what they need to get up and go out of here and do the next right thing. We're called to be a place that welcomes people who are not welcome anywhere, to invite people in, to accommodate our space for people who can't hear and see or get around the way that most people get around, to make sure that this is a place where all God's people can come. And all God's people can then be sent out to do the work that God calls us to do together. Our Lenten liturgy from the beginning of worship said, "It is a holy time as we fade into darkness. In this holy time, we go to see what will die with Jesus." What in us and around us and in our world needs to die? What will die despite our best efforts? Something will die with Jesus. Testing the limits of justice, we look for light in that space. Calling to the powers of this world, we claim our light in this space. Lamenting the violence and destruction of this world, we believe that more light will shine in and through us and around us. Living in the light of God, we know that our fire does not go out. God's light does not go out. Disappointed in the deaths that didn't have to be, we look for renewal. Longing for peace, we imagine how our fire will be rekindled as the Lenten candles are snuffed out. We gather in God's all-enfolding love and look into each other's hearts and hands for the hope of the world. Hope, nonetheless. Hope despite, hope regardless, hope still. Hope where we've ceased to hope. Hope amid what threatens hope. Hope with those who feed our hope. Hope beyond what we had hoped. Hope that draws us past our limits. Hope that defies expectations. Hope that questions what we have known. Hope that makes a way where there is none. Hope that takes us past our fear. Hope that calls us into life. Hope that holds us beyond death. Hope that blesses those to come. May it be so.